Court will proceed to the fourth case, Dorothy versus Ashcroft. Mr. Davidson.
Good morning, Your Honor.
I believe the court, my name is Mark Davidson, and I represent the petitioner appellant Jorge Duarte Esquivel. The Board of Immigration Appeals in this case on August 16, 2002, issued an affirmance without opinion affirming the immigration judge's decision of May 7, 2001. The appeal of the oral decision was made pursuant to 8 CFR 3.1A7. Initially, Your Honor, we would like to announce that we intend to withdraw from our argument that the recently promulgated regulations violate the statutory scheme. Instead, we solely intend to focus this argument upon our concern that the IJ issued a decision containing an incorrect legal standard to the prejudice of appellant, for which we seek remand. In particular, Your Honor, the IJ articulated an incorrect legal standard for identification of a particular social group when he required, as stated in his written opinion, that all witnesses must have been persecuted in order for a social group to be constituted.
Even if that's correct, and we agreed with you about social group, it seems to me that reading the immigration judge's opinion, he's willing to give Mr. Esquivel the benefit of the doubt on social group, and that the real problem in this case is his failure to link up the persecution or the terrible things that happened with the state, with state action. And, you know, that's a critical element as well. I wonder if you could comment on that.
Well, first off, Your Honor, I disagree with the belief that in order to constitute a social group, there is a necessity for state action.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying suppose there is an unequivocal social group. You know, a particular country discriminates against people of the Islamic faith or something. Everybody would agree. Actually, that's a religious group. It's not even a social group. Or maybe they were looking at his family as a social group or something. Suppose that part of the case is satisfied. Even then, if somebody just happens to hate the social group who isn't part of the government, then you still haven't made out your claim for asylum. You have to have a state-sponsored persecution.
I disagree with that analysis. The law requires that the persecutor be can be a government, obviously, but it doesn't have to be. It can be a group or organization that the government is unable or unwilling to control.
Well, and one of the problems you have there is, according to the record, there was that newspaper article that made mention of the Canny Coast organization, indicating that the Metropolitan Police had dismantled it in 1998. Is that an accurate translation? And why would the petitioner still be concerned about being persecuted by that group if it's been dismantled?
When reading the record, Your Honor, I don't recall it ever being stated specifically that the group was dismantled. It is true that the record states that that 12 members of Canecos were arrested and 4 were eventually prosecuted and incarcerated for the killing of the appellant's brother. However, Your Honor, even if that is the case, the problem with this particular case is there has been articulated an incorrect legal standard.
But let me just go back. There has to be that link with the government. You correctly say, meaning the government can't control or the government's doing it, but it's that link. It's partly from what Judge Williams is talking about, and as the immigration judge pointed out, the Canecos people were actually prosecuted in this case. Maybe that's rare, but it happened.
No, I respectfully disagree. There does not need to be a link between the persecution and the government.
Sure there does. You just yourself said that if the government can't control, if the government's turning a blind eye to, that's still ultimately the government.
That may be true. That's part But that's not saying that the government is actually
I'm not saying that either, but I'm saying you have to at least make that case.
Perhaps, Your Honor. I don't disagree with that analysis. However, in this particular circumstance, what the immigration judge did wrong was he created an analysis of a social group, two analyses of a social group, actually. One involving paramilitaries, and then the second one, which said that it could potentially just be criminal gangs who persecute witnesses who testify in criminal cases. And then what he did was he imposed upon that the incorrect legal standard that in order for the social group to exist, all members of that social group have to be persecuted. And then he came up with other alternative bases for decisions, including that perhaps the government was willing to protect him. But our problem is the BIA affirmed without opinion. And in this particular circumstance, according to regulation, an affirmance without opinion is equivalent to saying that the decision is correct, but we may or may not agree with any particular element of that decision. And so we don't know whether in this particular case the BIA affirmed that decision solely based upon the incorrect analysis of social group, or some other alternative one, which included perhaps, let's say, that the government was showed a willingness or an ability to protect the appellant.
But of course, our job, I mean, we can look at the whole record. I understand it would have been much better if you had some decision from the BIA so you'd be able to point out which part. But even if we give you, as Judge Wood said, even if we give you both of those arguments, that is that the IJ was incorrect in terms of the saying all in the social group and the other primary argument you're making, the bottom line is you can't show, and there wasn't sufficient evidence shown that it was either a state-sponsored gang or group, or that the state couldn't control the group. You know, so can't we reach? I mean, I appreciate it's not there in the BIA decision, but we can certainly review it and look at those alternative grounds and find that those other grounds that you indicated, even if we find their error, we can find it's harmless error and get to the other
points. I disagree with the court's determination on that, largely for several reasons. And they're both fairly specific. One is the regulations themselves require that an affirmance without opinion only issue when there is a correct determination of the judge and no material misstatement of the law. And here there clearly has been a material misstatement of the law. And this court would obviously be condoning a violation of the regulation if it were to impose its own opinion. And then secondly, and probably much more importantly, there is a different difference between this court towards the legal opinion of the IJ and the BIA. The BIA still had de novo review of all factual issues, whereas this court is going to give use a substantial evidence standard. And so the outcome can be quite different if the BIA were to review those issues, such as unwillingness of the government to control Kaneko's versus his court.
But the IJ made findings with respect to those alternative grounds.
Yes, he did make findings, and this court could affirm if it applied the substantial evidence standard. But the BIA may not affirm them if they use the de novo standard. They can look through the whole record and come to an entirely different decision. And that is the prejudice faced by my client in this case. We do not know specifically whether, in fact, the BIA affirmed that decision for an incorrect legal standard and ignored the rest of the decision. Essentially, we do not know whether the BIA simply reacted to the IJ's decision or actually listened. In either absence, this case needs to be remanded. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Davidson? Mr. Hausman?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Alan Hausman. I'm an attorney with the Office of Immigration Litigation at the Justice Department in Washington, representing the Respondent Attorney General and defending the decision of the immigration judge. I would like to address some of the issues that the members of the Court have raised with petitioner's counsel.
And try to go first to whether or not you agree with what the IJ says, that he had to show that all members of his social group have been targeted. Why don't you start there?
I certainly will, Your Honor. I think that the IJ, that petitioner's counsel misreads the IJ's decision. I think the core of the IJ's decision can be found in three pages of the administrative record. They're pages 144, 145, and 146 of the certified administrative record. That represents his basically his findings of fact and his conclusions of law, concisely put together in one place. The first of the IJ's decisions, speaking in an alternative and hypothetical way, address the point that the petitioner makes. Actually, what the immigration judge did initially was to address the class, the social group that the petitioner had identified, and that was individuals who have testified as witnesses in criminal trials in Colombia involving paramilitaries who are under the direction of corrupt government officials. The immigration judge found a failure of evidence to link up the Los Canecos gang of criminals with any direction from corrupt government officials. But the IJ, in a more expansive way, on page 145, then went to a hypothetical situation where he addressed a broader class of all individuals who appear as witnesses in criminal cases. And he discusses their vulnerability, and he used the sentence that on which petitioner rests their entire case, that all of the class members have to be targeted. I think a fair reading in the context of what the immigration judge was saying is that for the class to be valid, for it to be an acceptable social class for purposes of evaluation, the burden was on the petitioner to show that members of that proposed social group would be vulnerable to prosecution. Not in the past tense, targeted in the sense of having been persecuted, but essentially a social group that is at risk of persecution. And that is completely in accord with the holding of this court in the Aliyev decision at page, it's 127, F3rd, 638, at page 641. And in two sentences, the court said as follows. Mr. Aliyev must demonstrate that as a member of that family, and it was his family that's the social group, as a member of that family, he was or would be subject to persecution. He failed to demonstrate that his family was a particular target for persecution by Bulgarian authorities, therefore this claim fails. And so the immigration judge's holding was completely in accord with this court's evaluation of that rather complex and amorphous concept of social group on account of the asylum law. But the immigration judge rested his decision on three equal independent bases.
But you agree that we have no idea which one of them, if any, the BIA agreed with. So they aren't even there.
That's correct, Your Honor. All we know, including myself and the court, is that the panel member reviewed the notice of appeal, he reviewed the evidentiary record that was sent to the BIA from the immigration court, and he agreed with the immigration judge's result.
And you would also agree that this creates essentially a judicially unreviewable situation, because if the BIA member who did that had looked at the IJ and had failed to recognize, hypothetically, that the opinion was addressing an issue of first impression, we'd still be just reviewing the IJ's decision, and we'd have no way of saying, you know, boy, did you really blow it? You know, you should have referred it to a panel. You should have gone through the procedures that are set up. It's as though they just aren't there. You've eliminated a layer of de novo review.
That's correct, Your Honor. The Attorney General, in revising the appellate process from decisions of the immigration judge in the process of streamlining, has provided guidance, internal guidance, to the board member who reviews each case and set forth standards to guide that board member as to when a streamlined decision should be issued, when the individual board member may comment, and when the board member should refer it for a three-judge panel. But I would submit, Your Honor, that this court has reviewed exactly that situation, and in a set of circumstances...
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm just envisioning, yes, you know, the IJ member who's gotten tired of looking at these decisions, who just says, I'm just going to stamp affirmed on every 14, and then on the 15th one, I'm going to refer it to a panel. I take it there's nothing anybody could do about that.
Well,
I have a golf game this afternoon, time to go out.
Well, not that there isn't anything that someone can do. The members of the Board of Immigration Appeals, like my boss, our boss is the Attorney General.
How would you know?
And the Attorney General has provided written guidance to the board members, as well as to the attorneys in my office, as to how we're supposed to conduct our business, and the board members, how they're supposed to conduct their review.
But how would he ever know, since a lot of them get affirmed anyway? I mean,
well,
there's just no, I'm just establishing the point that this is an utterly random process, but we do review the IJ's opinion,
well,
and I'm happy to review it here. So.
Well, I think that all of the courts of appeals, the circuit courts operate, and lower courts operate with the premise that unless evidence to the contrary is shown, the law presumes that the government officials perform their duties in accordance with, consistent with the laws and with the instructions that are set forth in the regulations. And I guess we would know in the rare case when some evidence might be available, or in the cases when a circuit court reverses, finds error, and describes the basis of that error, and those decisions are transmitted back to the Justice Department, where we submit every adverse decision to the Solicitor General, and the Solicitor General has a process for reviewing whether or not to seek further review, and he is the delegate of the Attorney General, he or she, to report to the Attorney General when there is a problem. And the recent streamlining reorganization is a reflection that the Attorney General, in fact, pays heed to what is happening in the administrative review process, for the entire process has been changed. But I cannot conclude without making the point that the immigration judge reach his decision upon three independent grounds that the petitioner and his family, had not qualified under the law by establishing eligibility for asylum, and that if this court were to find the immigration judge correct on any of the three grounds, the case is over. And the petitioner here has challenged only one of the three grounds given by the immigration judge. The other two grounds have been waived on appeal and therefore can't be contested at this point. And so it's unnecessary for the court to reach the sole argument that the petitioner has made. And just to highlight it, the immigration judge found that there was no evidence that the Colombian government was unwilling or unable to control the Los Canecos group. And the evidence that he pointed to, which is the substantial evidence in the record, was the fact that upon the presentation to the police authorities and the prosecutorial authorities by the petitioner of the evidence concerning the kidnapping and then death of his brother, there was a successful prosecution. And so the government clearly is willing to take action to protect Colombian citizens. And finally, the immigration judge said that the petitioner failed to meet his burden to establish that he could find a safe place to live in Colombia by relocation. And the immigration judge's finding is premised upon a regulation. The Congress has chosen to vest in the Attorney General the initial authority of where to draw the lines in granting asylum and what the asylum law means. And through the regulation, the Attorney General says that before you seek safe haven in the United States, you must avail yourself of safe haven in your country if it is reasonably available. And the Supreme Court has agreed with that in INS versus Ventura, and specifically at 123 Supreme Court, 353 at 356, acknowledging the duty to relocate and the existence of the regulation. If the court doesn't have any further questions for me, I will express my thanks to the court.
Thank you, Mr. Allison. Mr. Davidson.
First of all, Your Honor, we didn't waive our argument with regard to the other two issues. We just thought it was more appropriate that upon remand those issues should be addressed by the BIA because they have de novo review, whereas of issues which are largely factual, or at least factual determinations with a ultimate conclusion of law. And with regard to the argument that this was not the core argument, that the judge did not really think all members of the group needed to be persecuted. He repeated that standard 3 to 4 times in his analysis. For example, assuming that all witnesses in criminal cases in Colombia are recognized as a social group, respondent must still show that all group members have been targeted for persecution. Here, the respondent has failed to establish that all witnesses in criminal cases in Colombia have been targeted for persecution. 3 times in one paragraph.
Ms. Davidson, as to the question of whether there was waiver, where are the other two arguments found in your opening brief?
Well, we didn't argue them, Your Honor, but we are arguing rather that it is improper for this court to consider those issues. What we're saying is that because this court reviews pursuant to substantial evidence, and the BIA refused pursuant to de novo, it would be prejudicial for this court to grant on the alternative argument when it doesn't know which of the 3 arguments the BIA affirmed upon, when de novo review may result in a different alternative by the BIA.
And I understand that it could be prejudicial to you, but what is the authority that says we're prevented from doing that? I mean, from reviewing the, you haven't preserved the issue up here. I had the same reaction as Judge Plum. I went back to the index of your brief just to make sure that I hadn't missed something. I mean, the main argument you made is the misstatement or the error that the IJ made in terms of the social group. You didn't really challenge those other alternative grounds.
Because we didn't think it was necessary to challenge them.
Well, it sounds to me like you're really not withdrawing your argument about the flaws in the administrative streamlining structure, notwithstanding the fact that this court has said it's okay. It's, of course, permissible for you to ask us to revisit an issue, but you have to be, if you haven't waived it, it has to be somehow embedded inside this procedural argument that you're making.
It is embedded inside the procedural argument. Yes, Your Honor. I'm not sure how I articulate it and how I state it. I'd like to just make one final point, Your Honor. Ventura versus INS, as cited to by the government. In that particular case, the Court of Appeals was going to reverse the BIA on a particular case. There was a determination of past persecution, and the BIA had not specifically addressed the issue of future persecution, but the Ninth Circuit went ahead and then stated that the BIA does not have to rule on that particular issue because we have determined that clearly the evidence in the record is determinative. The Supreme Court remanded the case back to the BIA and established for the following reasons. The Court of Appeals is not generally empowered to conduct a de novo inquiry into the matter being reviewed. The BIA is. The agency can bring its expertise to bear on the issue, including the presentation of further evidence on the matter. Thank you,
Mr. Davidson. Thank you, Mr. Hausman. The case is taken under advisement.